From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st, and I'm Tanisha Spain in for Brian Mackey today. And what you're hearing are the sounds of the psychedelic soul band Rotary Connection. They formed in Chicago, Illinois in 1966, and they're some of the artists featured in a new book by our next guest, Ayanna Contreras. It's titled Energy Never Dies, Afro-Optimism and Creativity, and is a written soundtrack of sorts to the music, the history, and culture that made Chicago's Black artists, both past and present, who they are today, from Earth, Wind & Fire to Chance the Rapper. Ayanna Contreras is a woman about town. That is, she's all about the city of Chicago. Her titles include music director and director of content for Vocalo 91.1 FM and Downbeat magazine contributor. She also describes herself as a vinyl, record, and fashion archaeologist and occasional podcaster. Contreras is the host of Reclaimed Soul, an all-vinyl show that airs on Vocalo and its sister station, WBEZ. And she's deeply invested in Black Chicago's well-being, and its commitment comes through loud and clear in her new book, Energy Never Dies, Afro-Optimism and Creativity. It's out now from the University of Illinois Press. Ayanna, thank you so much for taking the time to come and speak with us today.
Hi, thank you.
And out there, listeners, join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us at 21st Show. So first of all, let's talk about what inspired you to write this book. Where did this vision come from?
Well, having been a radio host for a number of years, I have had the opportunity to talk to lots and lots of people, and a lot of the folks I talked to were either old school musicians and recording artists from maybe the 1960s, 1970s, but then also a lot of the younger artists and visual artists as well. And what I realized was both sides of that coin feel like they're part of a thread, a continuity, if you will, of creativity. And I wanted to put these folks in conversation with each other. And that was sort of the impetus of the book.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, I have to ask, are you a Chicago native or did you just sort of stumble upon the city and fall in love? What's your backstory?
So my people on both sides have deep ties to Chicago. And on my mother's side, they actually came up on the Underground Railroad to the outskirts of the Chicagoland area initially. So I've been here a long time.
Fascinating. So you've got deep roots in the city.
Sure.
Is there a specific thing about Chicago, if you had to say, the food, the culture, the music, if you had to pick a thing, what would you say is the most that touches your heart the most, that captures your heart about Chicago?
You know, honestly, I don't know that I could do that. And I know that's not answering your question. But I think part of the reason why this book highlights, you know, the barbecue shacks right alongside the advertising campaigns and Earth, Wind & Fire is because I think of them all on the same sort of creative platform. I don't think of them as being separate things.
Interesting. That's a really neat way to look at it. And I knew that was a loaded question, but I thought I'd give it a shot and see if
Good
there
try.
Was something. Yeah, I, you know, I had to give it a shot there. Yeah. So let's talk about your relationship to Black arts and how that sort of, you know, is the pivotal thing in your life. So how does your relationship to Black arts relate to everything else that you do?
Well, I think working in media, what I realize is that I have this uncommon ability to uplift and to showcase these wonderful things that I'm privy to allow a platform to, you know, help keep this art scene going and growing. And that's sort of what gets me up in the morning.
So you've sort of taken this on as a mission, as a responsibility to keep the movement, keep the art alive.
I think absolutely. And to shine a light on things that maybe aren't getting the light that they deserve.
And you also mention a personally acquired archive. Now, is this clothes? Is this vinyl? Is this artifacts? Tell us a little bit about what you've got in your archive.
All of it.
All of the things. All of the things. I like it.
I have probably at this point maybe over 8,000 records. So there's that. But then also a deep archive of library bound Ebony magazines from mostly the 1960s and 70s that I use pretty frequently, and other sorts of books and magazines, ephemeral material, accoutrement, that sort of thing. And then, of course, clothes. You know,
of course.
But that's a different story.
That's another interview, right?
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about Afro-optimism that's in your subtitle? Break that down for us.
It's interesting because I didn't realize that putting that in the subtitle would be so sexy that everybody's going to ask about
it. Everyone's picked up on it, huh?
Yeah. You know, right now in the academy, there's a lot of conversation about the term Afro-pessimism as being sort of a way in which to view the world. Afro-pessimism specifically is defined as sort of being the state of perpetual doom based on the fact of your blackness. So if you are black and born in the United States of America, for instance, you are basically doomed.
Mm-hmm. And is this more self-fulfilling? Is this a self-fulfilling sort of?
Now, here we go. Now it's going to become like a religious philosophical conversation. That it's beyond you. You don't have any, it's fate. You don't have any, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's not up to you. But I actually, every time I hear someone say they're an Afro-pessimist, it literally makes me want to strangle somebody. Because it's like the first thing that I think about is the folks who came before us who didn't have the luxury to say that and could never even, in many cases, imagine what we have accomplished based on their struggles. You know, like if you're so focused on the things that aren't the way you think they should be, it's very difficult to really celebrate what it is that we are and what it is that we can be.
And how far we've come, because there is merit in celebrating that as well. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I just want to make a quick point. You know, what I didn't want putting the term Afro-optimism on the front. What I didn't want was for people to think that this is just a feel good rah-rah story without recognizing, you know, redlining and other sorts of oppression that folks have faced and continue to face. You know, that's not what I was trying to do, but it's almost a tragic optimism, which is a term that's been going around as well, which is, you know, you find this search for meaning through bad things that have happened, but then also understanding that good things are still possible and that this is another aspect of it that keeps us all going and, as I said before, growing, ideally.
I really like that. And you know, that is a loaded term to have on the cover, but you did a beautiful job explaining it. So I don't think I'll be the last one asking that question.
I'm ready.
You've got your answer down. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Ayanna Contreras. She's the author of the book Energy Never Dies, Afro-Optimism and Creativity. So in the book, you mentioned that Chicago feels sort of like it's perpetually on the verge of spring, or someone in the book says that. What does that mean? Let's break that concept down. What do you mean by being on the verge of a metaphorical spring?
You know, I really love that quote. And it wasn't me. I want to give credit. That was Leslie Guy, who was brought to Chicago from Philadelphia, I believe, to run our DuSable Museum of African-American History. And she said that. That was her impression of Chicago from an outside perspective.
Gotcha.
Which I think makes it even more rich, you know. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, the thing about it is there is this feeling that we are about to do something big, like something is about to happen and nobody knows what, but it's this buzz. And I think not every city feels that way. And it's interesting to feel that way, even knowing, you know, we all hear the news and we see some of the sad things and the tragic things that happen in the city of Chicago, but to also perpetually culturally feel like you're on the verge of spring, that's a beautiful thing. And you know, living in Illinois, you know what the verge of spring is like.
Oh,
you know,
yes,
you are ready to take those gloves off.
So ready
scarf.
To get rid of the hat and the coat and all of it. So it's like it's this hopeful feeling sort of deep in your gut that something good is coming. Is that
exactly
an accurate representation?
As opposed to what it felt like in February of last year, when I almost gave up on everything after like the 15th snow, and it was like I had an existential crisis.
Yeah, didn't we all, right? Speaking of something good, let's play a little bit more music from another Chicago artist that our listeners will probably recognize. Take a listen. So my memories of this song is of my dad in the kitchen on either Saturday or Sunday making breakfast and just belting this song out. So I want to ask you, how does Chicago show up in its music? Let's talk about that. And in this song specifically, what is Chicago about Tell Me Something Good to you?
That's a good question. I mean, to be totally transparent, that song was written by Stevie Wonder. So the song composition isn't so much of a Chicago song. But, I mean, the group Rufus came out of Chicago, actually out of a rock group called The American Breed. Originally, they had a hit in like 1968. Bend Me, Shake Me was the name of the song.
Couldn't help yourself with that little bit of music history, could you?
That's what I do. It's all off the dome, all off the dome. And then, of course, Chaka Khan came up in Chicago as well and, you know, really grew up in the scene, sort of looped in with some Panthers and took some courses at a place called the Afro Arts Theater that was run by a jazz musician by the name of Phil Coran, who actually also had as a house band a group called the Pharaohs. And the Pharaohs were the horn section that helped birth Earth, Wind, and Fire. So I think part of the way I'm trying to answer your question is that there's just so many rich ties of the Chicago scene that you wouldn't necessarily hear Tell Me Something Good and think of Earth, Wind, and Fire. But there you are. Like they were like, these folks were in the same room pinging ideas around and thoughts. And you know, even indirectly.
And that's with that funky sound that we've come to know and love from that generation, that era. Do you feel like Chicago is sometimes omitted from the conversation of funk roots, funk music? Do you feel like some of the other cities maybe got a little bit more shine, whereas Chicago did deserve some more of that credit?
Maybe not with funk. I'm going to be honest with you.
I mean,
you know, Ohio kind of killed that with the funk. There's just so much richness in Ohio and Detroit and other Midwestern cities specifically. Although the Ohio Players recorded in Chicago, Paragon Studios. that's a different story.
We're going to have to rebook you basically because we've already produced another show.
Yeah, right. But I mean, in terms of Chicago with soul, really classy kind of gospel and even blues imbued soul, I mean, it's untouchable in a lot of ways. It's just so unique and special, and definitely not like Motown, right? Mm-hmm. And definitely not like Stax, as much as I love Stax in Memphis, not like them. It's its own unique thing.
It's its own thing.
And again, the gospel and the blues definitely related to Chicago because that's such a Chicago thing. Like we are really about those two seemingly disparate genres of music.
So do you think that music has these sort of geographical bounds? Because you just touched on, you know, Detroit had this sound, Chicago had this sound. Let's talk a little bit about that, the geographic sort of bounds of the sounds that were coming out at that time.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the interesting thing about the pandemic, you didn't see me doing that, did you? The interesting thing about this pandemic is a lot of my musician friends have been doing a lot of sort of passing around tracks. You know, it's almost like telephone with music. I'm going to pass you this track and you do your thing. And then I'm going to pass you this track and you would lay down the bass and this, as opposed to what jazz musicians called woodshedding, which is like, you know, you get together maybe on a stage, maybe in somebody's basement and just jam and grow and develop. Most of these music scenes came through the latter, you know, playing in those local clubs, you know, the 20 grand or in Detroit. Or I guess the Burning Spear in Chicago, whatever. But then also in the sessions of various artists, that sound gets replicated and grows and develops.
And tell me a little bit about how the style has evolved.
You know, it's interesting because you could argue that the music coming out of Chicago today bears a striking resemblance to a lot of the music of yesteryear. I mean, I would argue that the sound of Rotary Connection is in direct conversation with a group called, what is the name of that group? Ding, 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 ding. I'm picturing the name of the group. Well, I mean, Reservoir is another one. Reservoir mm-hmm. is a group that sounds sort of has that sound. But yeah, there's a lot of groups that sort of have that almost psychedelic kind of free and jazz feel mm-hmm. happening. And I think the hip hop is in direct relationship to the blues in some ways, because what was that rapper that said in the 90s that hip hop is the new blues, relating the unvarnished truth of society? I don't think they said the unvarnished part, but they did say the hip hop is the new blues. So I mean, I do think that there's a space
yes.
for all the things that that this music was functioning as in the 60s and 70s today.
And even as things are changing and evolving, you still say that you believe there's this sort of invisible thread woven through the Chicago art and music scene.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, talking to the younger musicians, and there's a number of interviews with younger musicians and creative people, not only do they feel as though they are connected sort of spiritually, I think they feel as though they are in their work carrying on the legacy of the folks that came before them.
All right, Ayanna, we're going to put a pin in right there. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more of this conversation. Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Tanisha Spain, in for Brian Mackey today. You're listening to Chicago-based singer, songwriter, and artist Jamila Woods. That was her song, Baldwin, released in 2019. And she's one of several artists whose stories are featured in a new book by Ayanna Contreras, who we've been speaking with today. It's called Energy Never Dies, Afro-Optimism and Creativity, and it's out now. Ayanna is a music director and director of content for Vocalo 91.1 FM and a Downbeat magazine contributor. She also hosts Reclaimed Soul, an all-vinyl show that airs on Vocalo and its sister station, WBEZ. And we've been vibing here, talking about music. So that's piece we just heard was from Jamila, and she's featured in your book. What can you tell us about her?
Well, you know, one wonderful thing about her is you talk about a continuity, right? Like, you can name a thread. So, like, her wonderful poetry definitely ties in with the rich history of poetry that comes out of Chicago from people like Baba Haki Madhubuti, who considers himself directly tied to Gwendolyn Brooks, for instance, right? I mean, you can pull her that song in and of itself between her referencing Baldwin. She's also in that song, the production of it is referencing the rich productions of horns, like beautiful horns. That's also a real signature musical style that came out of Chicago soul in the 1960s and 1970s. Those particular choral horns, I should say, they serve the purpose of almost like a Greek chorus in music.
Beautiful. And that kind of lends itself to my next question of talking about modern day Chicago art sort of blending into artists of past. And the horns, that's a perfect example, because when we think of Chicago, the Chicago music scene, brass is certainly part of that. So is there just as much a looking forward to, you know, creating as well as paying homage and sort of, you know, looking back, in your opinion?
With this particular book, yes. And I do want to clarify one thing. The title of the book is Energy Never Dies, Afro-Optimism and Creativity in Chicago. And the reason why there's an In Chicago in the title, and it's important to do that, is because I wouldn't want anyone in another city to think that I'm excluding them for any specific reason.
Gotcha.
I just was
putting a spotlight on Chicago.
Correct. I mean, theoretically, you could write Energy Never Dies, Afro-Optimism and Creativity in Detroit. And that would be quite a compelling book, but it would also be a very different book.
Understood. Okay. Thanks for making that distinction. But what is that there about, you know, artists of past and artists of present? And what do you see happening as we move forward? Do you think we'll still continue to see more of that blending?
I mean, I hope so. The hope is that folks really embrace the idea of Sankofa, which is perpetually looking back and forward while you're, you know, squarely in the present. I think that is an important way in which to live life. You know, part of the reason why this book is also important is it has a lot of stories that I've heard over the years that I wanted to make sure were documented so that future generations could reference them. That's an important thing. You know, the griot was obviously an important part of traditional African cultures, but the assumption that these stories will be easily accessible to folks via the internet is actually not realistic. And not to say that the internet's going to disappear or there's some sort of, you know, tinfoil conspiracy at hand or afoot. But I think the reality is that because so much is being created at any given time and most of it is not really being archived or being tagged in a way that makes sense, it will be very difficult to access a lot of the information and content and stories that are important to us in this moment and in moments directly past.
Now, your book shares these hidden stories of triumph that you touched on, and I think they were described as undervalued cultural artifacts. Let's talk about that a little bit. Is there a particular story of empowerment or creativity or something that just sticks out to you or something that, you know, you think of often from your book?
You know, I think one thing that's super interesting is the story of Tom Washington, mainly because he's a person that I guarantee you have heard something that he put his blood, sweat, and tears into. But I promise that probably 90% of our listeners have never heard his name, you know. And it's an interesting thing, you know, to toil for that long and to actually have this level of success and to still kind of be, as you said, underappreciated, unheralded in many ways. So he's a person who is an arranger, like a soul music arranger, not just soul music, but mostly soul music, and arranged music for Earth, Wind, and Fire. And later on, even did some stuff for Phil Collins. Maybe you've heard the song In the Air Tonight.
Yes.
I don't know. Like all sorts of things, like hundreds and hundreds of things, you know.
But so his I wanted name to make sort sure of lost or would have been lost to history. Had, you know, had you or people like you who wrote books and archived historians who sort of put it in the record, I guess, is what I'm trying
right.
to say.
Exactly. And with a name like Tom Washington, you can't just Google Tom Washington, Chicago and expect his contact information to come up.
Now, so. In your book, you talk about, first of all, what is the music exodus that happened in the 70s? Can you take a minute or so and kind of just explain that to folks who may not be familiar?
So in maybe the 50s, 60s era, there was a place called Record Row where there was a concentrated kind of grouping of record labels, and not just homegrown Chicago record labels such as Chess Records or VJ Records, but also offices for other labels like ABC Paramount. And then also throughout the town, you know, like CBS had studios, RCA had studios, lots of large, big boys had labels in Chicago, had, you know, offices in Chicago, I should say. But by the 1970s, most of the music industry had become no longer regional and was really concentrated in Los Angeles and New York. And that's kind of continued to this day, you know, with the exception, of course, of Nashville as being a real center for a lot of scenes. But, you know, what wound up happening is a serious brain drain, first and foremost, of the folks who were big players in the 70s in Chicago music in terms of producers and arrangers and stuff like that. And session musicians, they got where the getting was good for the most part. A few people stayed, but most left, and almost all of those labels, those classic labels, were shuttered.
And then, you know, how did that impact Black Chicago, Black Chicago art, Black Chicago artists?
Well, you know, I mean, the first thing is there were the folks who stayed, you know, and they kind of muddled through. But, you know, I will say that maybe the saving grace of that moment for those people was the advertising industry. Leo Burnett and some other really top tier advertising firms were based in Chicago and are based in Chicago still to this day. And back then, most advertising firms, you know, hired people to do jingles, and that was quite lucrative, mm-hmm. which is kind of a funny little side turn. But yeah, so it wasn't all doom and gloom, but that original scene was gone in a lot of ways.
And to sort of piggyback off of that, do you think that people who are leaving the city of Chicago, and artists may be in that category, but when people leave the city or there's an exodus in a city, what are your thoughts on how that affects the culture and the art there? And do you worry that people leaving the city will cause damage to the art scene and the Black art scene in Chicago? Do you think that that is something that is even in the realm of possibility?
I don't know that I'm worried about it, because, I mean, history has proven that for everyone who leaves, someone comes and enriches the scene in one way or the other. Now, if everybody just picked up and left like the Rapture or something, yeah, sure, that could be problematic. Do you know what I mean?
I
mean, as long as there's some seeds that are still there, you know, something can still grow.
And personally, you know, what's this been like for you as a woman, as a Black woman in the industry, in the arts industry, in the music industry? What has your experience been like? Because, you know, we do know that this used to be more of a male-dominated field, but what has your experience been?
Oh, it definitely still is. I think, you know, now, I'm going to say now as in the year of our Lord 2021, now it's kind of sexy to have somebody, ooh, Black and female, on your panel or writing an article about something. And I think, you know, in general, publications are a little more cognizant of the optics of having an article about, I don't know, some sort of inequity, and having somebody who's not a person who is impacted by that inequity writing about it, you know. So in that sense, that's a marked improvement. I think I started out professionally in radio in the mid-aughts, closer to the early aughts, but don't tell anybody.
And it's just between us.
Yeah. Shh. But I think, you know, at that point, it was very difficult to be taken seriously. But I had a confluence of things going against me. You know, I was Black, I was woman, and I was young. It's like, who are you?
That's the triple, yeah, the triple kiss of death there. So you had to.
You?
Did you ever, during that time, those early years, did you ever think of bailing? Did you ever think of finding something else and sort of just ditching your passion because of the field? Did you ever have thoughts of getting out?
I mean, sure. Why not? But I mean, where would I go? It was sort of the thing. What would I do? Is there another city? Is there another position that I would rather do that was more fulfilling? Was sort of the question, right? And there wasn't, you know, so I just kept toiling. And one of the things that enriched me so much was when I would do a DJ gig out and about, or do a panel or tell a story, and someone talked about how what I said or what I played really impacted them positively. I think that's literally what kept me going. And it's also, in another way, the reason why I wrote this book, is sort of a love letter to those people that kept me going and keep this city's culture going in their own way.
We've got just a couple minutes left, but I want to ask you about this. You know, in the preface, you mentioned that the media paints a picture of Black Chicago as this soulless and brother pitted against brother sort of scenario. And those stories zoom in on the few. What is the Chicago that you want to share with people in a minute or less?
You're funny. So I think, I think, honestly, I find the city to be very warm and welcoming. And Black Chicago in particular is really just a really big southern city where people, when you're walking down the street, they speak, they acknowledge you. You don't have to know them. People ask about you. I slipped and fell on a grease stain at the gas station and you know, everybody surrounded me. It was like, are you okay?
That's that Midwest concern, right?
Yeah, I mean, but it's also very Southern, you know, that Southern hospitality. We care about you. You know, are you eating enough type bit? I do think that there's that aspect that people brought up with them on the Great Migration. It's more than just Midwestern nice. I'll say that.
OK. And before we go, hip us to something cool about Chicago that we probably don't know about, whether that's a visual artist, dancer, restaurant. Just throw us a bone, something that we should check out on our next trip up.
Well, if you do make it up, I recommend going to Dorian's through the record shop. It's literally a record shop with a speakeasy in the back, and they usually have cool DJs and music performances as well. So it's a twofer. Can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong with that. Ayanna, thank you so much for joining us today. This was a fantastic conversation. You are incredibly knowledgeable and passionate about what you do, and it was really nice and easy to talk to you today.
Thanks so much.
And Ayanna Contreras is the author of the new book, Energy Never Dies, Afro-Optimism and Creativity in Chicago. Did I get it? And it's out now. She also hosts Reclaim Soul, an all-vinyl show that airs on Vocalo and its sister station, WBEZ. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you.
And The 21st is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Erica Scalise is our engagement producer, and our interns are Owen Henderson, Zainab Qureshi, and Brielle Skullark. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Tanisha Spain, in for Brian Mackey. Happy holidays.
There's only one kind. So hush not, child.